What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, FightfulSelect.com. We got a whole lot of stuff to get into, so let's go ahead and do it. One of the big pieces of news last week was that Marty Scurll was involved in the New Japan tapings. We broke the news that he was backstage at the show, and Emily Pratt was able to gain a whole lot of information about this, so a lot of credit to her. She says that he was involved in an angle at the tapings in January that involved Rocky Romero as well. Now, we were originally told that he had expressed interest in rejoining the company, but weren't told about whether or not that was reciprocated. We were told that he had traveled and spent some time with some of the wrestlers there, but he and ROH parted ways in January after he was implicated in the Speaking Out movement in June 2020, and he issued a statement on that. But within a few weeks, he was doing work with New Japan. Now, that has not aired as of yet, but it was filmed just a couple of weeks after he parted ways with New Japan. I had wrestlers that were contacting me and saying, how does he still have a visa, and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how that works with New Japan, but I don't think it's a coincidence that everything happened in the timeline that it did. And I know a lot of people were like, well, why wasn't he fired right out of the gate? I mean, he was beyond being just a wrestler. He was an office employee at that point, and he was an office employee for Sinclair Broadcast Group, which comes with some protections, I would assume. But since then, I've heard from some wrestlers that perhaps didn't necessarily think it was a good idea and didn't know that he was going to be there and were a little bit concerned about being on the same show as him. So, yeah, there were some issues regarding that, definitely among the people that I spoke to. I also wanted to bring up another thing that Emily Pratt noted in her Fanbyte article. She said that a lot of the wrestlers adhere to a non-disclosure agreement for the New Japan Strong tapings. Now, sources that I have that have participated in those tapings before or have worked with those tapings noted that New Japan had got upset that word got out that they mass film content, and they asked wrestlers to not talk about any of the inner workings associated with the producing of the show. We'd heard of several wrestlers getting heat for talking about their time at the tapings and the dojo. But those that we spoke to, they weren't really bothered by the NDA or by those situations. They just say that every company's different and that the NDAs are mainly to prevent spoilers from emerging more than anything. Because if you've got tapings with fans, it's a lot different. You can't get everybody to sign an NDA. Lucha Underground did. It didn't work, though. But you can't get everybody to sign an NDA. But right now, it might as well be live if you're taping in front of no fans, because nobody knows who's going to win any of this stuff. In regards to the other aspects of getting heat, most of the people that I talked to just said, well, it's a difference in culture, it's a difference in the way that they do things, so not that big of a deal. But that's all the New Japan news that we actually have. But we have a whole lot of WWE news. Baron Corbin, there were a large number of wrestlers that went down with COVID around the start of the year, and quarantine caused a shuffle on a lot of programs. The day of the Superstar Spectacle tapings, Baron Corbin was actually only supposed to work that set of shows, but due to several wrestlers missing SmackDown, WWE also asked him to work those tapings. Now, those were the tapings that I think that Steve Cutler missed, and as a result, Wesley Blake was not on those shows either, and they never returned to TV, if I'm remembering right. Now, this did change the course of things. It reignited the feud with the Mysterio family and kind of got us where we are now. Bad Bunny. Now, this is not going to be a surprise to anyone who has paid attention of late, but the planned WrestleMania match for Bad Bunny as of early February is he and Damian Priest taking on John Morrison and The Miz in a tag team match. Bad Bunny and members of his family and entourage have been at the WWE Performance Center, and they participated in private lessons and training. And we had mentioned in the past that Damian Priest had impressed people backstage upon his WWE debut, but his on-screen friend in Bad Bunny seems to be a hit as well. Those that we heard from said that Bad Bunny was easy to deal with in their interactions with him and was opening to do what he needed to do on Sunday and Monday as well as being excited to do business in the future in that regard. One Raw wrestler said that Bad Bunny is treating the situation seriously and that it made a great impression on several in the locker room. And there are several people there, obviously, that are big fans of his along the way. Well, I'm a big fan of WWE documentaries, and Beth Phoenix was announced for an upcoming episode of WWE Icons. People that we spoke to said that announcing the series is more of a branding issue as a solid series they could push, as opposed to like, oh, well, individual documentaries and stuff like that. I'll try to make sense of it. WWE had Legion of Doom, Superstar Billy Graham, all kinds of documentaries, Chris Jericho, Eddie Guerrero, all those people. But this is just that. It's the same thing, but now they have a solid brand to put behind it in the Icons name. Because I was confused as to like if these would be more digestible, if they'd be like 20, 30 minutes. But what we saw from the Yokozuna episode was, no, they're an hour long. And now, granted, some of these WWE ones used to be 2, sometimes 3 hours long. But now they're a more digestible 1 hour as opposed to like 90 minutes to 2 hours. But this is a series that you can look forward to, sort of like Ruthless Aggression, where you say, okay, I'm going to catch the next one of that. And it's easier to brand, and I think that makes all the sense in the world. WWE's department over there continues to be the best at what they do. But WWE was still working on the Beth Phoenix documentary as of a few weeks ago and actually went to her hometown to film. Another WWE note, Fightful has heard varying things about the use of cardboard cutouts at Raymond James Stadium for WrestleMania as they used in the same venue for the Super Bowl. There were several people pushing for them to be used in a similar fashion because of how full the venue looked, including multiple that contacted us in awe of how the visuals were. However, I know that at least initially, as of around the Super Bowl, Vince McMahon was not in favor of them. That could change. You never know. He can be convinced. He has in the past. But as of then, unfortunately, not something he seemed to be a fan of. If you're a fan of Chelsea Green, we got some good news for you. Breaking this on FightfulSelect.com today. Chelsea Green has signed a new 3-year deal with the company. Now, late last year, I had heard of several names that I don't know if they had dragged their feet or a little bit slower to sign new deals. But Chelsea Green was one of those names that I heard. But I'm told that around late last year, I believe it is, she signed a new 3-year contract with WWE that will put her through 2023. She's been sidelined with a wrist injury since before Survivor Series. She was supposed to pop up there, be renamed Victorious, and be victorious in her match, which would have led to a big pay-per-view appearance at Survivor Series. That didn't happen. They had still offered her a new contract, from what I understand. I believe that came after. I could be wrong. I should specify. I don't know exactly when the deal came in. But they did get pen to paper, and she does have a new contract. There have been several pitches with Chelsea Green that weren't used before her debut. I've heard of at least one pitch that's come through and isn't happening so far. But hopefully they can get her back in the fold. I mean, that's a good contract, a good person to have under contract. She's really good with character work and stuff like that. Her original contract would have been set to expire this summer based on when she signed. So that's a good one for WWE to lock down, so to speak. We had an interview with Sean Maluta recently, who had some interesting insight on WWE and the Cruiserweight Classic he participated in. He mentioned that Michael Nakazawa of AEW fame was actually with Kota Ibushi during the tournament to help translate and lay out some of the matches. But he spoke to us about the process of appearing in AEW. We constantly hear that Christopher Daniels and QT Marshall are the points of contact there. And for him, it was QT Marshall. Maluta was already living in Florida because of how much WWE work he had been getting in the past. But he ended up getting good feedback and has been brought back to AEW several times since, which, of course, have dried up his WWE bookings. I put these enhancement stories in the can for quite a while. I like to interview somebody, get those, and release them a good long period later. But I felt like this ended up being one of my favorite. Beer City Bruiser, of all people. He did some WWE spots, and he said that because of his Wisconsin connection to Mr. Kennedy, that helped him get booked. Now, initially, he was just supposed to do a thing where he got beat up by Simon Dean. He was doing some stuff there. But he impressed Jim Ross and Paul Heyman enough to get a speaking role on TV. He faced Gemini. And because of that, he developed a professional relationship with Simon Dean. Now, I'm not sure a lot of you know this, but Mike Bucci, Simon Dean, ended up taking over some of the talent relations responsibilities for a while. He also said that Michael Hayes helped him a lot and told him that Bruiser reminded him of Terry Gordy. Hayes liked that Bruiser, Beer City Bruiser, was willing to accept criticism and improve. But the story that I felt the most interesting, and I had no idea about before he told me, WWE actually brought in Beer City Bruiser during the Roman Reigns Bray Wyatt feud, and he played the phony Bray Wyatt because they're built similarly. Now, around that same time, ROH offered Bruiser a contract, and WWE asked him to keep that line of communication open, and they actually had some talks with him in 2018, and he passed on the deal to stay with Ring of Honor, but it's still on good terms with WWE. But I had never known before he told me that Beer City Bruiser played the fake Bray Wyatt of all people, which I think is pretty cool. Got a whole lot of news coming this week, but let's go ahead and get into the injury updates and inactives. Buddy Murphy hasn't appeared since December. He's there. He's healthy. Reckoning and Braun Strowman are healthy now, too. They both returned on this past week's episode of Raw. Braun Strowman had been out of action since, I think, the Royal Rumble. But Braun Strowman showed up, wrestled, lost a match. We got an update from Samoa Joe. He was on Ricochino's show and said that he was not, well, one, he hasn't been cleared as of mid-February 2020, so over a year. But Samoa Joe reiterated he is not done. He's taking his time, and he wants to become WWE champion in the future. And hopefully we see him back in the ring. It is like I let out a deep sigh. I don't know if you guys could like feel that, hear that, but I miss the guy in the ring, and you never know how much longer somebody else has in the ring. Anna Jay, unfortunate news. She actually injured her shoulder in early January, and it required surgery. Well, it didn't require surgery then. She tried to tough it out. She was trying to make it into this tournament, and then she aggravated it about a week and a half ago, I believe it was. And according to AEW, she will miss 6 to 12 months. That is horrible. Get well soon, Anna Jay. Also 6 months, Hiromu Takahashi tore his pec in February. Not good. Not good. I think we may have mentioned that last week, but Naito was also pulled from the New Japan Road to Castle attack with a knee injury. But some good news. Our friend of Fightful, Chris Michaels. Some of you might remember Chris Michaels. His daughter was actually a girl that I put in touch with Becky Lynch. She made like this little website about how Becky Lynch was her hero and all that. And she got bullied for liking wrestling, and Becky reached out to her a couple of years back. Well, Chris Michaels is actually her father. We did this big interview on him last year. It's so good. He's done stuff for NWA, for TNA, for WWE, for WCW. He's been at the Performance Center twice, and he was actually there a year ago, right before he had bicep surgery. I think he had his surgery in May. He is set for his return. He'll be back in action in March. That's great news. A great guy, great family. Really like the dude, so glad to see him back, and hopefully the amount of knowledge that he has really gets tapped and put to use. So hopeful for that. Got some stats. Edge had not wrestled on WWE Raw since March 28, 2011. The irony, he teamed with Christian back then. In 14 days, King Corbin and Dominic Mysterio had 4 matches against one another, including the Royal Rumble. Bianca Belair won the Royal Rumble after only 19 Raw, SmackDown, and main roster pay-per-view matches. It's also 29 if you include main event matches, as well as the 2 pay-per-views before she got called up. AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy wrestled during February. They first wrestled 17 years ago in TNA. Angel Garza had his first Raw match since December 21st, and only his second since mid-October when the draft happened. Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre had their 8th match since August against one another. Riddle had 12 matches that included someone who is a member of the Hurt Business since November. Emi Sakura was heavily featured on AEW TV and pay-per-view in 2019, but had not wrestled for the company since December 11th, 2019. Her tournament appearance was the first time she'd wrestled for AEW in 14 months. Yuka Sakazaki also almost went a year between AEW matches due to the pandemic. Her tournament match aired on February 15th, and she had last wrestled for AEW on February 29th, 2020, for a match that aired in March. Jey Uso has not won a match since November 6th. Miz became the first ever two-time Grand Slam champion. Hikaru Shida, she is now the longest reigning All Elite Wrestling champion of any kind, passing Jon Moxley for that distinction. If Kenny Omega can make it to All Out, he will tie Jon Moxley's AEW World title reign record. For those asking about Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez getting a title shot before Lana and Naomi, Edge and Christian won a top contender match on September 6, 1999. However, on September 21st of 99, the New Age Outlaws reformed, won the tag titles from Rock and Mankind, and then Edge and Christian got their title shot 5 days later. There is precedent for it. Guys, hope you enjoyed this show. Dropping some contract news. That's really the only contract update we had, except for this. All the WWE signings. Man, there are plenty. Let's get into them. Bronson Rick Steiner, son of Rick Steiner. I mean, that's to me, that's the most intriguing signing. Of course, you have Taya Valkyrie, former Impact Knockouts champion, a historic one. And Eli Drake, who I think is great too. But as far as most intriguing to me is Bronson Rick Steiner, without a doubt. Like, to me, if they can hit with him and he looks like $1 million, that would be really good. AQA, Angela Arnold, man, she is one that came out of Booker T's school. That's probably my number two most intriguing. A lot of people will always ask, oh, well, why not Parker Boudreaux? Why not him? Long ways away on him, my friends. Got a good look. Looks a little bit like Lesnar, 6'4", 300. But I'll have more on him on Fightful Select. Anthony Henry, Evolve veteran, great signing. You have Chance Barrow, who people know as Harlem Bravado if they watch the independent circuit. Zoe Stark, who was Lacey Ryan on the Indies. You already know her. She's already made her impression felt. Gigi Dolan, who is Priscilla Kelly. Man, that's a great signing. And she differentiated her look up that way. People would stop comparing her to Paige and all that. Christian Casanova, who's been doing work with Limitless Wrestling. I know they've got high hopes for him. Cora Jade, who was Brianna Coda. You've got Drew Casper, who is the brother of Jacob Casper. He was already in the PC. But he's another one I look at with super high upside. One of the most intriguing to me. This is a hell of a class. This, I think, is the best class they brought in a very, very, very long time. I'll talk more about it in a bit. But he's a Division III, I think, number one seeded there. But it didn't end up happening. But, man, that level of wrestling is... You can't emulate it. Blake Christian, who they're using Christian Hubble. We broke the news on Fightful Select. Cameron Clay. You got Joe Areola, who is an amateur wrestler. Matrick Belton, a Division I football player. You got Taylor Grado, who wrestled as Avery Taylor in Evolve and Shine. And Carissa Rivera. This is one of the biggest classes, and you've got an outstanding mix of, one, actual athletic prospects like Bronson Rick Steiner and Parker Boudreaux, and a second-generation wrestler in Bronson Rick Steiner. You've got wrestling prospects like Drew Casper and Joe Areola. Also, Metric Belton played Division I football. You've got veterans of the indies like Carissa Rivera. You've got pretty new wrestlers on the indie circuit like the ones from Evolve and Blake Christian, who had made their impression felt. Priscilla Kelly, who had some buzz behind her. Same with Christian Casanova. But then you've got Taya Valkyrie and Eli Drake, which I really, really like them being brought in. I don't think they need to be brought in the Performance Center class necessarily, but yeah, so be it. Guys, hope you all enjoyed this show. I want to thank you all so much for taking the time and, quite frankly, caring and for supporting us. It means the world. We're out.